Hi, I'm Christian Reed, and you're listening to Behind the Panels.
They can be a great people color if they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 69 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that can only be understood if you listen to all the tie-in podcasts. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And I'm David Longo.
Oh, hello.
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 An interloper. In this issue, Warner casts a new Batman while DC moves the Justice League to Canada and redesigns Lobo as something quite beautiful. In related news, the internet explodes. Then we catch up on the latest comics, watch the new Marvel one-shot and more. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week...
Age of Ultron!
From Brian Michael Bendis. All that and more after this short message. This is Behind the Panels.
I'll blow this town to smithereens! Time bomb! Try to get up there in time, Spider-Man!
Watch me cut my web, Goblin!
Watch yourself fall, Silk Slinger!
Gotta stop the bombs in time!
If I don't get you, Webhead, my Dag of Nasties will!
Holy Hannah!
And you're running out of fluid!
Is this more action than even Spider-Man can handle?
Spider-Man, a video game from Parker Brothers, the ones to beat.
He's running out of fluid?
You look for that in store, kids.
More action than he can handle.
Oh, it's going to be a big episode this week. This is of course, episode...
69, dudes!
We've been waiting to play that for a long time.
I know, it's kind of appropriate that we're doing Age of Ultron this week, because it both sucks and blows.
And funnily enough, there's that explicit tag right back again.
Yeah, we're going to say apologies for last week. We lost it just a little bit.
Just a little.
We're back on track this week. But because it is Age of Ultron this week, our Wayback Machine is more appropriate than ever.
Oh, good.
So I am going to fire up the Wayback Machine, go back in time and change last week's episode.
Cool.
Hoping not to undo the fabric of space-time in the process.
Although before you play that, I will say that last week's episode had big numbers. So people are obviously didn't... hurt too bad. Over.
Didn't mind the swearing.
Maybe not just a little bit.
We can throw it in. We just put the explicit tag on. We're still
waiting for the feedback on there about whether you want an explicit tag or not.
So we'll get to that later. For now, I'm firing up the Wayback Machine, people. Hold on.
A high voltage arrow. My gloves are insulated so I can pluck it from my shield. But from where did it come?
Cannot you guess, Captain America?
You've become a super adaptoid. But how?
By using the photographic ability built into my eyes. I was not unconscious when your partners observed me. I studied each of you and adapted the sum total of all your powers. And now... I am a virtually unconquerable one-man team of Avengers.
How do I battle someone who has all of my skill, plus the strength and abilities of Giant Man, Hawkeye, and the Wasp?
You are doomed.
I've got to keep him on the defensive.
But I, too, have a shield and your ability to use it.
He's right. I'm actually battling a bigger, stronger version of myself.
See how easily I can fling you aside with one sweep of my giant shield.
He knocked the wind out of me. Must trick him into wasting time.
It's a pity your power does not equal your courage.
You couldn't have adapted all of our powers. You're too big to really be able to fly.
Ha ha ha, fool! I'll prove how wrong you are.
That brings us back to the present. There we are.
The Wasp?
Yeah, he has all the powers of the Wasp, so I think I should be fine.
I'd like to also point out that Captain America sounded an awful lot like Green Arrow.
Yeah, I wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into. That was, of course, from the old 1960s Captain America series. That was the adaptoid who became the
super adaptoid. You mean this one?
When Captain America throws his mighty shield.
You know you can't mention those cartoons.
Because they're nothing alike anymore, are they?
So whenever anybody complains about modern takes on superheroes, I think we should just go back to those as evidence.
Yeah, I think whenever anybody says, oh, it's not like it used to be, that's for a good
reason.
That's
what it used to be like.
I think we can complain about modern-day superheroes today.
Oh, we will
at some
today.
Point.
Yeah, well, no, we can complain about where the publishers are taking our superheroes. I don't think we can comment about the quality anymore.
No.
I mean, there's a big difference between what used to be presented as... I mean, not comic books. I'm talking about media.
Yeah.
And the media representations of our cartoon characters, of our favorite comic book characters, has changed greatly. Because they're actually taken seriously now, and I think that's the bigger issue.
Definitely more on that in the news headlines.
Yes.
But for now, look, we've all been reading a lot this week and watching a lot of things, so let's quickly hit up the What We've Been Reading section.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
So okay. Okay, now what? Did
Have
that?
We been reading?
Well, actually, we'll start off with something we've been watching, because Dave and I got to go to... Thanks
bastards,
to-
bastards, bastards, bastards. Hate you both, bastards.
Well, the DVD's out this week, David. Dave and I got
it
to
It was
go-
a great 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, it's true, actually. That's what she said. We got to go and see, thanks to Disney, we got to go and see the DVD Blu-ray bonus features for the Iron Man 3 release. It's coming out this week in Australia, but not for another month in the US, I think.
Now, to be fair, I think I was being invited to it, but I was at work. I had a block call, and our rep...
Yes.
It was always a blocked call, and I had a blocked call, but I was working that night, so I couldn't have made it anyway.
Fair enough.
But I really wanted to go to this. So, Jane, if you were trying to call, I apologize.
Well,
so.
Certainly for you, David, this was obviously a big thing because Agent Carter was screened. And I know you're a tiny little bit of a Hayley Atwell fan. And that was good. That was like a 15-minute short.
It was about that, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a nice... unlike the other ones, it was really cinematic. It was the same director as Item 47. Mm.
It's the same director on all of them, I think, so.
No, he's only done the last two.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's the same writer, though, has been on all of them. And the guy that directed these is, I think, he's like the executive producer on all of the... Yeah, all the other ones. So, really, really good. I think Louis Esposito, I think his name is, something like that.
And really good soundtrack as well.
Great soundtrack. Yeah. it was like a proper professional...
It almost... I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but it felt like a deleted scene... from Captain America.
Yeah,
but that's actually a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I lean to that side more. Yeah.
You know what? This is the first one that actually feels like an interlude between one movie and the next rather than just kind of a punchline.
Well, and this is... When I saw Item 47, I was actually really hoping that cast was being rolled into S.H.I.E.L.D. I thought that was basically a prequel to S.H.I.E.L.D. and I thought this would be awesome, but then none of that happened.
Well, they might turn up yet. We don't know. But this... I mean, look... Well, I won't spoil the ending for you, but there's certainly more than one character. And this is probably the first one that actually has one of the A-list actors from the movie actually playing the lead role in the short as well. Normally it's like somebody else and, you know, Robert Downey Jr. cameos or whatever. But this was actually a Peggy Carter proper film, and rightfully so, because she kicks ass in it.
And she's awesome.
Yeah.
Marry me. No, I'm married. Sorry.
Dave, you liked it as well?
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing we saw, of course, was the, I think, Blink and You'll Miss It teaser for Thor 2.
That's right. It was, what, 30 seconds long?
Yeah, not much. Like,
I think the trailer's longer. 2 seconds of new footage.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I think if you're interested in Jane Foster levitating in the air... Then I would get this Blu-ray.
Yeah. That's actually, I think that's online now as well. So there's nothing that they haven't, you know, released. Now, like, it came out like the next day online. The trailer's longer than the footage that we saw. The thing that we did see, and I remember you saying, Dave, on the night that you really liked the behind-the-scenes feature because it was a little bit more substantial.
Yeah,
than...
well, the biggest disappointment ever in maybe the last 5 years of DVD releases has been The Avengers.
Certainly the Australian release.
The Australian release. I think, well, the only difference was the American edition had an audio commentary.
Yeah, oh, it also came with, there was a multi-part documentary on some of the discs, so depending on
I really wanted to see that, and we didn't get it.
So. And this, what we saw sort of teaser a quite a substantial behind the scenes.
So all it says to me is that there is going to be a double dip, and there'll be an Avengers special edition coming out, which will have the deleted scenes reintegrated into it, and it'll have all those documentaries.
And a huge part of this behind the scenes featurette was that they actually had a pre-production party, and it shows you behind the scenes that they're actually having a party before they shot any footage. And so if they're going to show us that in the behind the scenes, well, then I'm guessing we can expect a lot more of the actual film.
I'm hoping so. Yeah. Now, look, I mean, it looks good. I can't wait to see the Blu-ray quality of this thing. We're lucky we're getting it early. By the looks of things, from what I can tell, we're getting the same disc that the Americans are getting.
When is Iron Man 3 coming out?
Iron Man 3 is coming out August 28th here in Australia. So by the time the show comes out, it'll only be a couple of days later.
I'll be buying it first day.
And look for the review on the website on behindthepanels.net, because I'll be putting one up there.
And we might be able to do some giveaways.
We might be able to, we haven't confirmed that, but our rep has told us that there'll be potential for that. So look out for that as well. So that's what we've been watching. I just quickly mentioned I saw Red 2.
I really want to see Red 2.
Which has been getting kind of average reviews, but look, to me, it was just as fun as the first
one. Funny thing is, though, the first one got average reviews as well, yet I loved the first one.
Yeah, if you love the first one, you're going to love the second one, because it's just fun. And there's that group of characters back together again. A few new people in there as well.
How was Anthony Hopkins?
He was mad.
I think he looks really good in the
trailer. Oh, mad as a box of badgers, but he's great. He's really good in it. He's a good addition to the cast. But everything else about it is everything you love from the first one. Those three characters working together again, because you've got John Malkovich, Bruce Willis. I've forgotten her name. Mary Louise Parker, and Helen Mirren all back together again.
Oh, Helen Mirren.
So it's.
No, I also love Mary Louise Parker. That reaction in the first film where she says, "So what's the charge if we get caught doing this?" He goes, "It'll be treason and it'll be execution." She goes, "Awesome."
Yeah. Which is kind of where the second film picks up, with her kind of bored with because Bruce Willis has become very domestic.
Right.
And she wants to get back out there and do more stuff. And so as soon as something comes up, John Malkovich pops
up.
The trailer
is awesome.
We'll do it. We'll do whatever you want us to do.
Yeah, the trailer for it is awesome. I mean, it really just looks like it captures everything from the first film.
It does.
And I'm really looking forward to it.
It's fun. And, you know, I'm sure there will be various bloggers who destroy it on the internet. but there are no...
I don't think they listen to this show, so
no,
it's hard.
But there is no reason to diss on it, because it's fun.
Have you guys read the comic that it's based on?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have actually.
Is it actually any good?
No, well, the funny thing is, I mean, yeah, it's actually quite good. But
it's only three issues,
isn't it? It's three issues, and the entire comic is quite literally Frank realizing he's been betrayed, making a killing spree to Washington and killing everybody involved. That's it.
Oh, okay.
That's so all the comic book is.
Right, so it's like Wanted.
Yeah, but less than that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's literally this nugget of an idea that's all about just how everybody's in panic because he's coming. And he's basically killing everyone in his way. They expanded it out for the movie to have all these other characters and all this other stuff going on. But none of that's in the comic book. They then released, though, what is really interesting is they released four comic books when the first movie came out, which was the prequel to Red. Mm. And it basically told the backstory of the four main characters, which led to the film. And that's a really good comic book. So as far as prequels go, that's a really good read. Mm. And in fact, I think better than the original comic book that it was based on. So Red is actually a much better film than it is a comic book.
Yes, I tend to agree. And look, because I watched Red again the night before I saw Red 2.
I watched it again a couple of weeks ago.
And just to get back in the mood for it, because I'd kind of forgotten the ending. And, you know, they both work together. They work as a nice little...
And Red 1 still has the coolest shot in cinema history.
In history,
Bruce Willis steps out of that car and it's still moving.
Oh, swinging around. Yeah,
that is so awesome.
That is
one of the coolest. And if you blink, you miss it. And and yet it is so awesome, that shot. And you just go, oh man, I want to know how much of that is digital, how much that's real. But it's just this, because he's so stoic through that move, you just go, that is just oozes cool out of every pore.
Yeah, that's the Bruce Willis action hero that we love.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the Bruce Willis we've been missing for a long time.
It doesn't sound like we're going to get him back, though.
No,
and apparently he was I heard this secondhand, but apparently he was on the junket for Red 2, and he was being a dick to the reporters.
He's
just a dick to everybody.
I heard he flat out openly said that he only does action movies now for money, and he just phones them in.
Well, that's the only reason I do them.
Well, yeah.
You know, we all take a chance every now and then.
All right,
let's just quickly, not that quickly, because...
Let's talk about Expendables 3 really quickly, if we're going to... Trash Bruce Willis for a bit. I know, but let's just bring this in, because he was offered $1 million a day for 4 days.
Yeah, but what I love, and then is, turned it down, right? The like, fact that Sylvester Stallone fired Bruce Willis. That's what, that's awesome. Yeah. And what was his exact quote? Lazy, greedy.
That's right. Lazy and greedy.
Lazy and greedy. Awesome stuff. You can actually, we'll promote another podcast. Go out and listen to Hollywood Babylon. They talk a lot about this.
Okay.
They go on a huge
rant about
it.
I don't think Kevin Smith needs our promotion, but if he's listening.
If he's listening, because we want Kevin Smith on our show.
We want you to come on, Kevin Smith. And tell what, listeners, badger Kevin Smith if you want him to come on to this show, because we want him to come on and talk about Quiver in detail.
We want to do a Quiver show, and we want him to be there with us.
And we want him to do the equivalent of Fat Man on Batman, but for Quiver.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's because I love that show. It's great.
It's a great show.
Anywho, I think we should talk about what we've been reading as well, because we've been reading a veritable...
Can I go bash my head against the wall at this point?
A metric show.
This is not going to be a positive week for...
A metric shit ton of
ow.
He's still hitting his head. Shut up, Dave.
Thanks.
While Dave's getting out of his concussion, we'll talk about Avengers, because last week we said that we were gonna you and I, David, read Infinity.
Yes,
and I was saying that I didn't get it. And you suggested it was because I hadn't read all of Avengers.
And so I went and said, I promise you all that I'm going to go out and read the Avengers and the new Avengers, and then I'm going to read Infinity, and we'll get back to you this week. I can't get back to you this week because I'm not up to Infinity yet.
But I did. I went back and read them all. And I'm going to confess right here, I don't understand Avengers.
No. Look,
I don't get it.
I started reading Avengers when Marvel Now started, because I'm a big Avengers fan, and I'm coming straight off of Bendis' run. And I went, okay, Hickman's taking it over, let's start it. And I didn't understand it then.
No.
And I read about 4 inches and went, I'm out.
it's about halfway through. It's about 10, 11, 12 issues into that it starts becoming like your more traditional book. Now, look, I get...
No, it doesn't. Well, and that's the problem.
It starts having momentum forward. There's space things
so
involved.
Does a train running against a wall.
It's true. Or your head against the wall, as the case may be.
That's the case.
No, the thing is, he's time jumping. He sort of goes like, now and then, but here's another bit. Hey...
He gives you chapter titles to help, you know, like
Richard summed it up for me best before the show. He texted me a couple of days ago where you said, I feel like every time I start a new issue, I feel like I've missed issues.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how I feel. I pick it up and I go, okay, I know I have to get through this because I know this is leading up to Infinity. So I'm thinking, I'm going to read a few issues. I'm going to get used to it. And then we get the prelude to Infinity. And I think, okay, I'm going to get through, you know, a couple, because normally prelude to Infinity is like 2 issues, maybe. No, prelude to Infinity goes for about 6 issues. And I'm sitting there, I'm now in the prelude to Infinity, and I still don't understand what's going on.
He does, at the start of every issue, he's got the previously on Avengers. And I'm like... Okay, that's what happened. I still don't know what's going on, but I'm going with it. And as far as I can tell, the first 18 issues have led up to something's coming for Earth and we have to stop it.
Yeah, and at the same time, we've got godlike...
That's all it boils down to.
Yeah. It took him 18 issues to tell us that.
And what I would really like to point out is... Marvel Now was all about kind of bringing the universe together and making it cohesive and everything else.
And accessible.
And yet what we have is we have... Going on in the events of the Avengers, we have all of these life probes being fired in and all this weirdness happening in all these various countries and different...
Perth.
All these different evolutionary things happening in the world is in danger, and yet none of this is happening in any other book.
No, actually, I've said the fact that there's another Earth hanging over ours surely would be mentioned somewhere.
You would think we would have noticed that in something else, like, you know, Spider-Man Captain Marvel or something.
Superior Spider-Man, I will take over all of you. What the hell is that?
And why has nobody noticed that Spider-Man is a total dick?
Yeah. You know? They addressed it in the Spider books, but not in the Avengers books.
In the Avengers book, he's being completely insulting. It's like, nobody seems to notice that Parker is not acting the way that Parker used
funny.
To act.
I know Dave's itching to defend this, and I'm going to let you finish, but
I wasn't going to defend it at all.
But, and the thing is, I'm enjoying New Avengers more because it's more of these kind of Illuminati story than
I've read one issue of New Avengers, and I'm going to get through them, but I've read one issue, and basically what I read was an issue of Civil War.
Yeah. It is that the Illuminati special that came out a few years ago. It's a recap of that, but then it gets into quite a good story about how these how the Illuminati have to band together.
And it seems to have forgotten that Mr. Fantastic is off.
Well, no, they address that. they do address that, and some throwaway line like, I can be everywhere at once.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's it. And you think,
we're going to come back to that in Age of Ultron because there's a tie-in with that as well. Yeah, so yeah. It's like, yeah.
There's a lot of... I don't think any of these events have reference to anything
else.
Have
any of these authors actually talked to
each other? No.
You know? It's like, this is what I want to know.
Talk about DC editorial. I don't know what Marvel editorial
is. And it was tight. Marvel editorial was tight.
Airtight.
It was airtight. It was tight for quite some time. And then just in the last couple of months, it has lost its friggin' mind. I don't know what's going on over there.
Well, it seems at the moment like Bendis is in one corner and you've got Jonathan Hickman in another, and that's the end of the story.
This is exactly it. I think all of these authors are writing their story, and because they're powerful. And I respect what Jonathan Hickman's doing because I love East of West, and I love the fact that he's trying to build something different. But it's kind of like, I'm doing it, damn the rest of you. Yeah. This is my story. Bendis does exactly the same thing. It's like there's the Bendis verse, there's the Hickman verse.
But then again,
and you know, there's
Matt Fraction is doing the same thing. He's basically going, well, I don't understand what either of you guys are doing, so here's Hawkeye.
But
here's
Fraction's.
And then just to make it complicated, they blow up their own universes at the real end.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly it.
So, look, I'm having a lot of trouble with.
And how does this tie in with Hunger, which is another multiverse destroying thing, which seems to be telling a parallel universe story.
And the issue I was talking about, Rise of Thanos, seems to be completely unrelated at this point because it's talking about the history of Thanos, which has gotten better, but now I'm worried that we're at the penultimate issue.
And also, somebody was invading Earth in the Guardians as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, what happened to the, where during all of this time, didn't we have a Badoon invasion somewhere?
Yeah.
You know, but that's not addressed in anything.
I'll eat crow for what I'm going to say if the opposite happens, but I'm going to put money down now and say that Age of Ultron is just going to disappear eventually. AI, all of that stuff is going to peter out.
Oh, I have no doubt about
it. It's just going to be Infinity is going to be the canon, and then
because what's
this is going to be cancelled after a few
issues. Age of Ultron, which we're going to come back to later and talk about in more detail, is for one purpose.
Mm.
And we'll come back to that, what that purpose is.
It's a cataclysmic purpose.
It was designed and written for one reason and one reason only.
Yeah.
And we'll come back more to that later because it's once again, it's Marvelitis. We've talked about this before. Marvelitis is a disease that has come about since the end of Siege. Siege was the last great Marvel event. Since that time, every event, Fear Itself, Spider Island, every event that they've done so far has been an ad for another event.
Yeah.
And now DC seems to be catching Marvel.
That's true.
Flashpoint didn't do that.
Dave captured it the other day. He referred to it as the Tyenity War.
Yes.
Tyenity War. That's good. I like that too.
And my other one is the Infinitian event.
Yeah.
I'm getting really, really, really sick of events being just big ads.
Yeah.
I want them to be events. I have a beginning, a middle, and an end, conclude and go, wow, that was satisfying.
Look, economics dictates that is what's going to happen. We've said that, you know, the comic business only has so many readers and they have to keep generating events to keep us interested. To keep me interested, you don't have to do that. You just have to have good writing, which is like, you know, things like solid books like Hawkeye and Green Arrow and so forth at the moment are you know, or you know, East of West, or Satellite Sam, or anything Image is doing.
Saga.
Saga. Yeah, exactly.
Thank
God,
Saga's back.
Saga takes a 4-month break to, you know, work on, you know, to keep the quality.
You know what? I never thought I'd be the one to say this, but I am really thanking the independents at the moment because as much as I love Marvel and DC and the big superheroes, and I'm a big capes and tights guy. Okay, but I am so glad we've got some of these independents to fall back on where we can go and read. Even if you want a superhero, I can go read Invincible, or I can read, you know, Suburbia or something like that. But I can also have things like Saga and stuff to fall back on because the big two at the moment are out of their freaking minds.
Exactly. Like, it seems like, you know, the New 52 came out, Marvel Now came out, and it's like, let's build these characters. The second we get to sort of a comfort mode with these characters is
when we have
0 Year being a prequel. Yes. So Batman's out. I can't read Batman now. You know, like Superior Spider-Man, they killed Peter and now I don't have Spider-Man.
What?
Really? Spoilers and all. Yeah, they still haven't brought him back. Slot. Yeah. And then it's Age of Ultron, which the universe blows up.
I got to say, we've got to move on. But the one thing I'll say is I started this show as a DC reader, rapidly became a Marvel reader, and now I am the biggest independent convert that you've ever seen. Like, I'm reading, you know, mostly.
And the funny thing is, I started as a heavy Marvel reader. I actually slipped into DC for some time, and now I'm kind of sitting on the fence with both of them.
Yeah.
And Independence.
Independence. Thank God for them. We've got to move on with our news headlines, and we've got some doozies this week. And that's going to take a little bit of time to talk about, but I think we can rip through Age of Ultron pretty quickly at the end of this.
I think it's pretty clear what our thoughts on Age of Ultron are at this point.
So, let us have some news. Warner has announced that Ben Affleck has been cast as Batman in the Man of Steel sequel. Sorry, I can't say it.
Oh, dear.
He won't be able to act with a straight face either, so don't worry.
DC Comics will replace the Justice League of America with Justice League Canada following Forever Evil, eh? What is this news?
Navid Negabon joins Arrow Season 2 as a new villain, hinting at the introduction of the League of Shadows, something we can get excited about.
There we go. Tyler Bates will provide the score for Guardians of the Galaxy. Bates was previously scored Watchmen 300, as well as director James Gunn's Slither and Super. Shut up, crime!
Australia's Gestalt Comics has announced new titles, including Midas from Tom Taylor, the Undertaker Morton Stone reprints with Ben Templesmith, and Christian Reed's Unmasked number 3.
Man of Steel heads to DVD and Blu-ray in Australia on November 6th and the US on November 12th, and I don't care.
Boom Studios' Damon has been marked by Universal for a film adaptation. They had previously had success with the recent Two Guns.
Bradley Cooper is rumored to be voicing Rocket Raccoon in Guardians of the Galaxy. Not confirmed at this point, though.
Doesn't sound right to me. Finally, DC have revealed the new look for Lobo. And he's as pretty as any vegan fashion victim should be.
Oh, yes, he is.
Kids, let's bring this up. It's... this is...
Now, can we just say that Lobo traditionally was a big, evil-looking, tough, you know...
Well,
weapons.
Something like that.
There you go. There's a Lobo cigar chomping, just a big badass, all right? And now he looks like... He should be in the eastern suburbs.
Well, it's funny because editor, somebody described him as a French vegan.
Somebody said he looks very Atlantean.
Yeah, what's the difference?
Twilight,
yeah.
He's not impressive in any way.
Editor-in-chief, DC's editor-in-chief, Bob Harris, said that the Lobo you've seen so far in the New 52 is not who you think he is. In this one shot, you'll be introduced to the real Lobo, a ruthless killer. Lobo is on a quest to kill the man who's taking his name. Something I've got to point out about this. There's two characters that DC have redesigned since their New 52 introduction. Lobo was introduced in Deathstroke by Rob Liefeld.
Right.
So Cheshire was introduced in the now-cancelled Grifter, or was going to be, and Cheshire was already introduced, also designed by Rob Liefeld. Mm-hmm. Rob Liefeld dramatically walked out of DC in August 2012, and that's two of his characters they've redesigned since then. I think this is a big middle finger to Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, I think it might be.
Yeah. So,
but no, this is a terrible redesign. I mean, you just look at this and go, this is not Lobo.
This is classic. Or actually, in defense of Rob Liefeld, who Grant Morrison on Fat Man on Batman gave me a deep appreciation for. He was criticizing the groupthink at DC, this kind of corporate culture. And this is classic example. This is DC with one hand giving and the other hand taking away. But I think, guys, before we get into Age of Ultron, there's a bigger story this week we have to talk about.
Bigger than Ben Affleck becoming Batman?
No, Ben Affleck. That is the story that we have to talk about.
I think we may need to. Now, look, my reaction when I first heard the news.
Ranting hats on.
Was, what the F? I thought, what the hell are we doing with this? I've since calmed down a little bit about this. And in fact, I will actually have to say that it was... Comic Dorks, the podcast where they actually really analyzed this. And they said, you know, when we think of Ben Affleck as Batman, the immediate reaction is, oh, Daredevil.
Mm. Well, I tend to think of another film of his.
Oh, yeah?
But Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms.
Yeah, there's that. But the point that that Steven Schleicher made was that this is not the same Ben Affleck that was in the Kevin Smith movies or Daredevil or Pearl Harbor. This is the Ben Affleck that has won 2 Oscars, who directed and starred in Argo and The Town, and is a much more mature Ben Affleck than there was before. So,
and they will be going for an older Batman because they're look like they're probably making the second half of Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
That seems to be kind of where they're heading.
Which is punishing.
Which is punishing, yeah. I think
so many levels.
I think the movie itself has disaster written all over it, so I didn't care who they cast as Batman.
Pretty much, and I think that's the bigger issue, which is, do we really think this movie is a good idea?
Well, when I first heard the news, that's what went through my brain. Exactly the same.
Yeah. We have a person staring in the window of the studio, and it's very off-putting.
And look, the thing is, same as you, David. My first reaction to this was, okay, what the hell? My next reaction was, you know, I don't really have a reaction to this. I don't know how to feel about it because I don't care enough.
I want to put this out there. When we heard...
David, put it away.
When we heard the original casting news of Michael Keaton back in the 80s, we all went, what the hell? That's not Batman. He's Mr. Mom. Okay? And
Heath Ledger and Anne Hathaway, same.
Exactly. When I heard Heath Ledger was playing Joker, I went, what the hell? That he can't play it, you know? So I think what we need to do is all take a chill pill and all sit back and basically say, let's wait and see what their interpretation of it is before we make that huge jump of it's going to suck.
It's funny you should say that because here's a headline. Warner Brothers received over 50,000 complaints over casting of Batman as in 1988.
Yeah.
That was back in 1988, everyone complained about Michael Keaton, and then that became, for a short period of time, the definitive Batman
version. And everybody
version.
Loved him as Batman, and in particular as Bruce Wayne.
The difference is, though, that there wasn't really a precedent but Adam West.
Yeah,
like,
that's
at this time.
True.
Now there's a, like, pretty big shoes
Can
to
I
fill.
Can I point out, though, that Christian Bale is actually not that good
as
Batman?
No,
you know what I mean? He was a bit rough around the edges, and that voice was really, really distracting.
Because you wear hockey pants, David.
Yeah, and I think Christopher Nolan did a great job with his Batman films.
Particularly
the first two, particularly the first one, as far as I'm concerned. But Christian Bale wasn't riding on Christian Bale. Christian Bale could have been somebody else.
But it's the same thing with all Batman films. It never seems to be about
No, and that's the thing. I think we kind of put too much weight on who's behind the cowl.
Yeah.
When really, it could have been anybody behind the cowl. George Clooney did not sink Batman and Robin.
No, no way.
Batman and Robin was sunk by Joel Schumacher. You know what I mean?
But I think I agree with your original sentiment, though. Like, you know, that it's Man of Steel did X with Superman, and it wasn't really the Superman we like. And so... Mm. Putting a good Batman into a bad Superman movie is still not going to fix.
No, the
thing is, what I'm really concerned about more is Zack Snyder handling Batman versus Superman than I am whose cast is Batman.
And it's not just Batman and Superman now; it's The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Well,
effective. Well, they,
he says it's not. I mean, that's the thing. He says it's not.
And they use that to tease the film. It is Batman versus Superman. It could be more.
He
like...
says that's the tone we're going for, not necessarily that's what it is.
Yeah,
we don't know what it's going to be.
Given that they've just made it as an animated film, they probably won't exactly.
I'm hoping
that.
They don't go.
And
that
large
way.
Slabs of Dark Knight Rises was Dark.
Also,
Dark Knight Returns.
That the entire story precedence of Dark Knight Returns requires them to be older characters in a different world.
Ben Affleck's not exactly young.
No, but I'm talking about an older as in it's a different world.
Yeah.
Superheroes are gone.
Yes.
You know, it's a very different
This
premise.
Is meant to be the birth of the age of super... This is actually one of the interesting things is that the fact that they're introducing Affleck, who is not a young actor...
Yeah, but he's still only 40.
We're
not talking about an old actor.
No, we're not talking about an old actor, but he's older than you'd expect for someone who's just entering the business.
But he is supposed to be the person who is leading a major corporation. He can't be a young pup.
That's
you know
true.
I mean?
Well,
and
he
I,
was orphaned at, you
sure,
know.
But I think by the time he's gone through all his training and everything else and become Batman, he's got to put on some years. You know
That's
what I mean?
True.
And I don't think, I think the idea of casting younger, continually going younger, is not the right direction for Batman.
And
Batman has to be mature.
They're definitely not doing the Nolanverse, hey?
No. Nolanverse is closed off. But this has to be the lead-in to Justice League. So it can't be Batman Returns.
Before we head off this topic, I'd like to read out some of the best Twitter reactions to this, which was some of it was Peter Stark said that Ben Affleck is the Sharknado of action heroes. Elizabeth Bain said in the new Ben Affleck version, the Batmobile is just a beige Prius. Let me see. You like apples, Riddler? Was Patton Oswalt's one. Richard Dreyfuss says, you read for a part, you feel good about it. You read for a part, you feel good about it. You feel confident. Then they cast Ben Affleck. Brian Michael Bendis said, I just made some calls around Hollywood and I'm happy to report that Ben Affleck will be keeping the Argo beard when he plays Batman.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Stephen Amell says, I'm now totally confident I'll eventually play Iron Man. Oh man, I hope the next movie is going to be Batman versus Daredevil, all Affleck, all the time. That was our Weird Al Yankovic. Yeah, look, I mean, it's. I think that people have come out. Someone's just like paint chopped, like just done black paint over Ben Affleck's head. It was doing the rounds of the internet at the moment. I think people have been really overreacting to this on the net, given that we're about 18 months away from the first footage.
Yeah.
So, look, you know, let's just calm the fuck down, people.
And you know what?
Sorry, I just said.
Yeah, it's all right. We'll let that one slide, I think. But you know what? There is another factor here, which, and I know this is not going to be a popular opinion, but I didn't hate Daredevil. You know?
No, particularly if you get the extended cut. It's not
exactly,
too bad.
The extended cut is actually not that bad. It's not the best.
Oh, God,
Marvel
how
film.
Is that? That was it's the nerdiest only, thing only, I've ever said. If you get the extended cut, it's actually a lot better.
It's only Jennifer Garner as Elektra in that. That's the.
But even that, I didn't mind that.
That's the Evanescence song.
even Jennifer Garner as Elektra, I didn't mind. I just hated it when she did it in her own movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, the actual Daredevil movie wasn't horrible. I mean, it was not great, but it wasn't horrible.
No.
And it was quite watchable, and I own a copy on DVD, and you know, whatever. He wasn't the problem. Once again, he wasn't the problem as Daredevil. The problem with Daredevil was the director and the writer, you know? Because it needed a little bit more work.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's an actor.
He's an actor. He comes and he fills the job.
Yeah. You know? Like, if the costume's great, if the movie around him's great.
Here is the next piece of gossip, though, that I don't know if you guys have heard this one kicking around, but this is the big one. Now, apparently 6 months ago, there was actually floated the idea that Ben Affleck had been offered the Justice League as a director.
Yeah, I'd heard this as well.
And he turned it down because Ben Affleck is a actor-director and wanted a role for himself. He's now playing Batman.
Yeah.
Do you think that he might step in and direct Justice League now?
Well, it's possible if they can make it to a Justice League. If DC and Warner don't implode sometime between now and 2015.
I'm just wondering if that's kind of one of the steps behind Warner Bros' decision.
It's possible. I've also heard rumors that Bryan Cranston's up for Lex Luthor.
I heard that. I could actually see that.
I've also heard Mark Strong's up for Luthor, so...
That gives definite
that's the nail in the coffin
that the Green Lantern has been completely passed off.
Mark Strong actually kind of almost confirmed that, so I don't know what's going on there.
Interesting.
Because Luthor's entirely a definite possibility.
I want to see Mark Strong play Martian Manhunter, actually.
That would be interesting. The thing is, he was such a great Sinestro, so it's a shame that's one element that didn't make it out of it.
Once again, Green Lantern, the problem wasn't really the actors. I mean, okay, Ryan Reynolds was
Blake Lively.
Blake Lively. Yeah. I'm talking about the main actors. Forget Blake Dead. But in Blake Deadly.
Deadly's a good thing here in Australia.
It was the script and the direction of that film was the nail in the coffin of the film. Because, I mean, Ryan Reynolds is okay as the obnoxious Hal Jordan, because let's face it, Hal Jordan is a dick, you know?
Yeah.
And Sinestro wasn't the problem, and all the stuff on Oa wasn't a problem. It was whenever they got to Earth, we ran into a big issue. And it was timing, pacing, and a script. And I think if you'd rewritten Green Lantern and got a better director on it, I think we might have had a better film. So I'm not going to blame Ryan Reynolds and Mark Strong for that film. Oh, I'm being played off.
Just to remind us, this once happened while we're talking.
Oh, yeah.
This is Prince from 1989.
Oh, you got it. We bat promised dance. It last week.
Bit of bat dance in there. I mean, the thing is, you know, every generation has its own Batman. This was the 1980s Batman.
This is the Batman I hated.
Yeah. You know, I think none of us have said it yet. The obvious thing, Ben Affleck may not be the Batman we deserve right now. But he's the Batman we're getting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I'm getting down.
This can actually happen, people. This was the definitive version of Batman that we all loved.
Can I just
for
state
10
for
years.
The record that I hated this song back then, and I hate that song now.
Yeah. You were more of a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles
soundtrack
fan.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Go Turtles. Go Ninja, go. No, I was never that either. I really actually couldn't stand the fact that they would shoehorn in the modern music or the popular music with the superheroes. It was like, I actually remember sitting down at the cinema to watch Batman for the first time. Packed house, advanced screening, sat down, and I just looked at my date at the time, and I just went, if this opens with a Prince song, I'm walking out.
The soundtrack craze of the 80s.
Oh, man. And then when Danny Elfman's music kicked in, I went, thank God for that. But the Prince music was so badly placed.
That song goes for 6 minutes, so I'm stopping it there. I think we've now 40 minutes into this episode.
We better talk about the book.
Let's talk about it. Let's just get through it.
All right.
Well, see how you like this. What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Years ago, founding Avenger Henry Pym invented the artificial intelligence known as Ultron. Once Ultron became sentient, he dedicated his existence to destroying humanity. He succeeded. Created by human writing machine Brian Michael Bendis, along with artists Brian Hitch and Brad Peterson, this is one of the major events of the Marvel calendar for the year 2013. This is Age of Ultron.
Same thing, isn't it? Time travel and a robot?
Pretty much. Can I start this by saying that I actually went to reread this book prior to talking about it today, and I read the first
the fourth issue.
When you get to the big reveal as to what's in the ship, I can't remember what issue it is now, but when you get to that big reveal, I went, I'm reading it. And then you turn to the next book, and that's it. Just kind of go, I'm out. Through it really fast, you know? This book is, yeah.
Let's just really do a quick spoilers and all recap, people. This is the sexy robot voice intro kind of set us up. That the Ultron, it's a present day thing. Ultron's taken over. It seems to be an alternate timeline. Yeah.
However, it was stated very clearly at the beginning that this is not an alternate timeline.
This is now.
It's canon.
This is Marvel now,
and it's happening. Yeah. Get used to it.
So that was happening. All these things. We only appeared in a few other books that were labeled like, you know, Superior Spider-Man AU or whatever.
Yeah.
But basically, it's a 10-issue miniseries. That starts with the status quo being Ultron's taken over. There's only a handful of superheroes surviving. They argue for about 3 issues. Then it's suddenly revealed that...
it wasn't Ultron at all.
No, it wasn't Ultron at all. There's the Vision there. Ultron's actually attacking them from the future sometime. And then someone goes, I know, the future. Let's send someone into the past to stop Hank Pym from creating Ultron in the first place. They go back in time. That creates an alternate 1985A. That creates a 2013 A, and then for about 3 or 4 issues we're in a completely different book.
And let me smack my head against the wall again.
Yeah. Then so we're in this other book for a while where it's an alternate thing. They're running around having alternate universe adventures. Then someone goes, you know what? Let's go back in time again and stop ourselves from stopping ourselves. And then they go back in time. That fixes shit.
Can I mention?
But then, unfortunately, that rips a hole in the space-time continuum.
Can I mention that before you mention the tag, which is the punchline, which is, let's face it, all of these 10 issues all led to that last frame, which is what this whole thing was for. But I would like to point out that after issue 3 or 4, after the reveal of the Vision, Ultron never comes back.
No.
It's got nothing to do with Ultron after that.
It's Age of...
Age of... And what does it become again? It becomes another friggin' Wolverine book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it is just about Wolverine all over again. And this is Marvel goes...
He's the best theory is at what he does. And what he does is a hell of a lot.
And what he does is appears in every goddamn book.
And it wasn't even a particularly good version of Wolverine either. It wasn't even in character.
And you know what? One Wolverine wasn't good enough. Let's put two of them in.
If you play it back in your mind, it's the stupidest Wolverine decision ever made.
Absolutely.
It's like, I'm going to go back in time and kill myself.
Yeah.
That'll fix
everything. There was what would be cool? Wolverine fighting Wolverine. You know what would be cooler? Wolverine killing Wolverine.
He's the only one who could do it. Yeah. Although it happens off screen, so we never actually know how he did it.
Yeah, that other Wolverine will come back at some stage, maybe. You know. I did what I had to do. I launched another tie-in title.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? So we get to the last panel.
Yeah.
And let's just drop this out there right now because the news has already been dropped.
Well, it's already in Guardians.
Yeah, well, that's right. But not only that, the news has already been dropped that the Marvel Ultimate Universe is being closed down.
Yep.
So we know that now. Okay. And the only two real books that were still going were The Ultimates and Ultimate Spider-Man. Yeah. Ultimate Spider-Man is really popular and Ultimates is dying. Yeah. So basically they're closing the Ultimates and they thought, well, Miles Morales is a really popular character. What should we do? Well, Superior Spider-Man sucks. So let's bring him into the 616 universe and see if we can restore
and
Spider-Man.
Have two Spider-Men that aren't Peter Parker.
That's correct. But I think Miles Morales might have something to do with helping bring Parker back.
So we kind of Jonathan Hickman that a little bit because we're jumping all over the place. But
that seems to be the Marvel way at the moment. Yeah. So let's talk about breakfast.
I'll start working on a chart for you guys.
Yeah. you work on a language over there. But the important key points from the end of this series is that because of all the time traveling, they stuffed up space-time.
They ripped a hole in space.
They ripped a hole in space-time, which I think was the actual start of the last Guardians of the Galaxy run, the DNA run. Then, so what they've done with it, this is proved the existence of a multiverse, one of which is the Ultimate Universe, now which, as we know, they were keeping back the secrets of hunger for quite some time. Now that hunger is one or two issues in, we know that hunger is actually our Galactus
jumping into the ultimate universe, but not sufficient to make it Galactus, which is like, you know, a cosmic entity, unstoppable cosmic entity. Let's possess him.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's a whole different book.
It's a super hungry
Galactus. But let's turn a super hungry so he can eat all of the universe.
Look for the new Mattel game, Hungry Hungry Galactus. It's a little world coming out of the board. You have to get all the electric.
We all have to dress as Silver Surfers when we play.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it right now. I am a big Brian Michael Bendis fan, but this is not his finest moment. And
he's had a few
fine moments of late. This was a big problem, this book, because he started out with this huge premise. And I was the first to say,
I thought issue one is amazing.
Absolutely. Some of the tie-in books, those AU books you're talking about, were fantastic. Mm. There is a Avengers Assemble AU title, which was not written by Kelly Sue DeConnick. It was written by another writer who stepped in, which was all about what Natasha was doing at the time when it all started. And that's an awesome book, you know? And you sit there and you go, some of the tie-in books were better than the actual main book. And some of the stuff that was happening in the main book, it was intriguing. You were wondering what was going on and how did this tie into our universe.
Did you ever find out, Dave, sorry to interrupt you, but did you ever find out if it was true, Richard, that this was written 2 years ago?
I heard and it was, yeah, he wrote this quite some time ago.
Hmm. And then Marvel Now was a decision made after.
Yeah, and so basically they reworked it.
So that'll make sense based on what you're saying. Maybe the tie-ins were written with Marvel Now in context
So the Marvel and some of the Marvel Now stuff is really some of the AU stuff was actually very interesting. Now there was a big bugbear that I had with all this, which was they had this big Matt Fraction launch of the new Fantastic Four where they're going off into space and the FF was there to look after it and they're going off on their voyage to have a look. And as soon as this thing started, what did they do? Suddenly, Sue's back on Earth and she's doing stuff. So how does that fit in? Mm. And we have an AU title of Fantastic Four where they go, we're in a time machine. Yeah. Let's zip back and find out what's going on.
I'm not ashamed to eat my hat on a podcast. I'm looking back at my review for the first issue of Age of Ultron.
Oh, here we go.
Which I gave 9 out of 10.
Yep.
And I said, climb aboard with this series. We have the feeling this is not only going to be one of the bigger events of the year, but one of the best written as well. And I'm quite happy.
I applaud you, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that one wrong. I made it my pick of the week that week.
Based on the first three issues.
What else did you have on there?
Tied it with Sex was the other book, which has gone downhill rapidly.
Although getting more graphic, as it seems.
Yeah.
But the...
You're getting more graphic by the sounds.
I don't even know where to start with this thing.
Look, the thing is about this series is that it started out as one book and then became something completely different. That's not in and of itself a problem, but the fact that it forgot its original premise and it was very, very clear by issue 5 that this was no longer going to be about the story that they set out to tell. It was a backhand pilot. It was what do they call it? A backdoor pilot for another series, which is increasingly common. But this is probably
we've talked about that before recently. I believe.
Yeah.
Can I just say House of M?
House of, look, House of M, Avengers versus X-Men, the thing before Avengers versus X-Men, Avengers Extinction. The thing that we just talked about, Infinity, which is a lead into the Inhumanity event, which is going to follow that up as well.
Yep.
All of this, and that's
Spider Island.
As we said, all simple economics, but Age of Ultron is particularly insidious because it does it so blatantly obvious. It's kind of like halfway through it, it raises the middle finger and says, "Yeah, we got you in now, and now we're just going to do our own story." It's like, it's almost as though Bendis just decided, you know what,
I'm bored.
I'm doing a different story now. And decided, like, he was working on two stories simultaneously and decided to glue them together haphazardly.
Like a deck of cards, just shuffled them together.
And see what works. And it doesn't work at all. No. It does not gel.
You know, the only... I was thinking about it, because since the beginning of this episode I've been bagging out Marvel events since Siege. There has been one event that was actually okay. One event that has come out since Siege, which Richard and I both acclaimed. We said this is really good.
Fear itself
was garbage. No, it was Spider-Man.
Couldn't help yourself. No, Spider-Man was good. And Spider-Man, in a way, is a prelude to Hunger.
Yeah, but think about it. Spider-Man had a beginning, a middle, and an end. It had no tie-in issues. It was five issues, and it was out.
In a way, it did tease Cataclysm.
Yeah.
But it reminded us that Miles Morales could work in the 616 and all that sort of stuff. But in and of itself, it was just a perfect little...
Absolutely. Yeah. And you look at that and you go, that's how you handle a crossover event, you know? Not this... God, the Avengers, man. I can't deal with Infinity. I'm having trouble with this. And the same trouble I'm having with that is the trouble I'm having with Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Which is, it doesn't gel together.
It hurts your brain.
It hurts your brain. And you know what? Comic book reading shouldn't hurt your brain.
Mm.
This is what we do because we love reading about these characters. We love having adventures and so forth. This is not fun.
For a scenario, you guys are a comic book shop owner. You're working in the store. I walk in and go, can you tell me what I need to know for Infinity? It's like, what do you respond? Here's Spider Island.
Just waves his arm over the collection and says that.
Wall there. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, if you're going to stick with the big two at the moment, you don't stick with any of the major titles. You jump to the smaller titles. Savage Red She-Hulk. What do you call it? Red She-Hulk.
Hawkeye.
Not bad. Hawkeye. Brilliance. You look at... give me a second. They're coming back to me. Indestructible Hulk.
Yeah.
Really good read at the moment.
You go to the Nova.
Nova's funny.
Yeah.
Funny
Nova book. Is fun. Nova's fun.
You go to the DC side of things. You're going to read Batgirl. You're going to read Supergirl.
Even Batman by itself, even though it's a major title, it's done a pretty good job of
staying to itself. Exactly. You know? Yeah. And you sit there and you look at these titles and you go, these are the small things where you sit there and go, if you're going to go for the big ones.
Did we mention Daredevil?
Daredevil.
There you go.
Daredevil. Brilliance, right? And you sit there and you go, if you're going to stick with the big two, there are titles to stick with, but all of their major books at the moment are shocking. And you sit there and you go, what the hell are you people doing?
They're chasing the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, where we should end our discussion of Age of Ultron with, by saying it chased the lowest common denominator and it caught it and embraced it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it led to more events, so it's just another ad for more events.
Well, that's kind of my opinion of it. A quick round of opinions on that one. Just recommend? No? Yes?
Nah,
no.
Not at all. No?
Now, I will say we do have a dissenting opinion, which is my son also read it.
Yes.
And he actually really enjoyed it. Now, he doesn't have the background history. He didn't read the lead-ups to it. He read Age of Ultron.
Ooh,
and as Age of Ultron, just as a single work, 10 issues, he enjoyed it. He thought it was actually pretty good.
There is an Avengers 12.1 issue or something that ties into this somehow, like Avengers Assemble or something.
Oh, is this the Mark Waid one?
Yeah, and it ties in vaguely, and it's okay.
It's just an origin.
We should actually say, though, that the very last issue, Age of Ultron 10 AI... number whatever
the second
it is
issue that's just come out
so. Yeah, no, 10 AI was like the final like epilogue,
right?
Is a great issue, and it's probably the best thing that came out of it. It's a Hank Pym issue.
Oh yes, that's a really good
best thing that came out of Age of Ultron. It's really fun, it's really funny, and the series that led into that, Avengers AI, as you said, Dave, the second issue's just come out, is a great, it's a really funny series. It's got a Doombot running around in it. Dr. Doom is a robot. Often he's just a head going, I'll get you all, you know, and it's funny. It's the kind of book I'd probably write if I were, you know, if I ever had the time or inclination. It is, that's probably the only good thing I can say that came out of Age of Ultron. Otherwise, David, have you got the girl handy?
Oh, do I have the girl handy? That's always a trick.
Because we have a little bit of feedback
this
week.
Is. Hello, girl.
We mentioned last week that, we mentioned at the top of the show that our show got a little blue last week.
I did a little bit.
A good friend, Matt Snake Oz White, wrote in and said, hey Dave, Richard, yes, the show needs to carry the explicit tag. Smiley face. I was laughing my ass off when you guys were playing the soundboard clips and quoting the movie. But like once again, like the FFDF incident, I'm paraphrasing of course, back from the film show, I wasn't listening on my headphones at work, even though I said I would on Twitter. Lol. Lucky the boss had left this time, but you guys had the whole office laughing. Can't wait for the film and hopefully the geek shows return, but loving the behind the panels just as much. Cheers, Matt Snake Oz White, sent from my iPhone.
Awesome. Yeah. As it should be.
So, look, we probably won't be carrying an explicit tag, but...
But it was fun once in a while, and we
yeah, well, Kick-Ass 3 comes out. We'll drop it.
Look, at it is time and place, and I mean, sometimes we're going to do a book that is a little bit more mature, a little bit more blue, and if we're doing a book like that, we're going to have to work a little bit blue. So you know, it's the way
you can't
it
even talk about Garth Ennis book without it.
Yeah,
we actually
yeah
managed to do Preacher with a clean tag.
With
a clean,
yeah, and we did Punisher Kills the Marvel. Yeah. Apparently, Garth Ennis is doing is in the very, very early stages of a new Punisher series.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because there's no Punisher at the moment, is there? There's no Punisher
no
book.
No, they finished Punisher.
So he's apparently in the very early planning stages of a new Punisher book. So
can I just say that yeah Punisher run that ended with that little 4-issue Warzone?
Oh,
that was an amazing Punisher
beautiful
run.
Stuff. That was as good as Daredevil.
And his yeah Punisher Max is great too.
Yeah.
No, that Punisher run was really good. Sensational.
But Welcome Back Frank.
The most recent Punisher, that was great. Yeah, but Welcome Back Frank, I love. A lot of people didn't like it because they said, oh, it's not, you know, it's
dark enough
and whatever. And I actually like the Tom Jane movie because it's largely based on that. Yeah. People said, oh no, Punisher wouldn't be like that. It's like, go to that run. That's exactly what he's like. You know, he's not a nice guy.
Nothing beats the bear scene. I'm sorry, that bear scene is one of the funniest things.
The polar bear, yeah.
The polar bear where he goes, I wish I could stay
here. Just because it opens with him punching a polar bear and just letting it loose from there. I know, it's great.
Yeah, no, that's a brilliant run. But no, I'm talking about the 2011 run that started the same month as Daredevil. Now, Daredevil
was that kind of stealth reboot they did.
It was that stealth rebooty thing they did. And 2011, 2010,
whatever 2011
was it called The Tiger?
It's just called The Punisher.
Okay.
And when it came to its conclusion, it rolled into Punisher Warzone, but it wasn't the Punisher Warzone from the past. It was a 4-issue conclusion.
Just
to
wrapping
the Punisher,
up.
It
was the one where there was this woman whose family had been killed as well.
And took her on as like an apprentice.
Okay.
And it was phenomenal. It was such a good run.
And it crossed over with Avenging Spider-Man.
Daredevil. It was really, really good. It was a damaged Frank. And it was like, she was helping put him back on task in many ways. And it was a really good issue. Really good kind. Ran for, I think it was all up with Warzone. It's probably 20-odd issues. And it was just fantastic. It was really... I was so sad that finished, actually. Yeah, because by the end of it, all the Avengers were chasing him. Because they basically came to the conclusion... That's what the Warzone's about. Because they basically came to the conclusion they now had to stop him. It had gotten too far. And so it was like, okay, we finally have to step up and actually take responsibility for this. And they went after him. And it was just really good.
All right, kids, what are we doing next week? Next week, we are doing Black Sad, which is a book that I've
never read this. So.
I've read the first volume of it. I'd like to read the others. And it's really great. It's a European book. It's been translated by Dark Horse, if you can get it. We're doing the first volume of this. If you pick up the hard copy of the first Dark Horse volume, which is the English translation, it actually has the first three books in there together. And there's a separate one called A Silent Hell, which is basically volume 4. But it is only two books you're looking for in English. You can get them, I think, digitally through Dark Horse. I'll have to double check that for next week. But I love it. It's basically really hard-boiled noir kind of stuff, but with animals. And it sounds kind of silly when you say it like that, but think mouse, think, you know, that kind of thing. Think about where you can substitute animals to get away with a lot more.
Yeah, Richard showed me the artwork from it.
The artwork is beautiful.
It's just magnificent.
I'm going to work on pronouncing the artists and writers' names between now and then. it's a Spanish book. So it's really...
So we're doing volume one, right?
We're doing volume one, which I think is called something like Somewhere in the Shadows or something along those lines. But yeah, volume one, first story.
On capes for a few weeks now, so it's nice to actually go back and do something.
Get something a little bit different. I'm really looking forward to sharing because I've read this book and I'm going to read the other ones just to compare, and I really want to see what you guys think about it. So I'm looking forward to that. But until then, where can we find all of us peoples online. Start with you, David.
You can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh.
You can find me on behindthepanels.net, therealbits.com, or on Twitter at DVDBits.
And you can find me at damngoodcup.com and at Dave Longo on Twitter.
Fantastic. Well, until next week then, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And I'm Dave Longo.
And I'm your new lord and master. And this is Behind the Panels.
Okay, I just got to say one last thing after all of this, which is if they don't use that as the final music on the new Avengers movie, I'm going to be very disappointed.
Absolutely, yeah. Joss Whedon, if you're listening, do it.
Do it.
Do it.